Arthur, I'll be in here. Quiet now, I'm recording.
Hello, Tick here. You, my friend, well, if you're an evildoer, cover your ears, because you are listening to the Canned Air Podcast, which is nothing but keen spoon!
All right, Arthur, you can come out now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hartenbrook.
And joining us today, we have two gentlemen from Red Sash Publishing here to talk about their game, Gatewalkers, The World of Wotorial. We welcome Jonathan Etzweiler and Trent Raber. Gentlemen, thank you guys so much for being here.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks.
We're going to have a good time today in our retro roundtable. This is a topic we've talked about before, but it's been a long time, and we have a little bit of a, I guess, different twist. I mean, not a twist, I should say. We're approaching it having listened to the other one, so we don't repeat ourselves too much.
And you got a new co-host with us.
Yeah, you and I were the only ones that were here last time.
But when you came in and sat down and, you know, started listening to things we talked about in that other episode, all it was like a bunch of shit was on my list. Fuck!
You get everyone else's insight on those ones, too, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, Trent's here, too, so we've got enough people that I may not even have to get down to my list of shame here. So, that's good. But then after that, we're going to turn our attention over to Jonathan and Trent and talk more about the Red Sash Publishing and their Kickstarter. But before we do all that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. If you like what we're doing, want to show some support, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod, or you can just go to our website, CannedAirPodcast.com, where you can, for $5 a month, sign up for our Patreon, get access to our Patreon pod, and for $10 a month, not only do you get access to that show, but you get a whole bunch of other projects. Go ahead.
I was going to say swag.
There is swag. There's shirts.
Swag eventually.
Yeah, there's merchandise you can get through there too, but just the other shows that are coming out, you know, the radio theater stuff we've been doing, the Comic Vault, the old segment that was cut from this show now has its own show on our Patreon. All kinds of bullshit for you to, or not bullshit, but good stuff for you to listen to.
Hey,
over
bullshit.
There. Give us your money. And we are part of the Evergreen Podcast Network now, gentlemen. That is very, very cool, very exciting.
Very prestigious, and we're looking forward to all the amazing things that come along with that. So.
Yeah, we've been on a few other networks before, but they've been much smaller scale, kind of startup things, independent things. And, you know, they were great experiences. You know, good, bad, happy, sad, an experience is an experience. You learn from it.
Yes.
And this time, we seem to really kind of have a much better situation going.
We're playing in the big leagues now.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not talking to NBC or anything like that, but we're getting
NPR.
Always goes back to NPR.
This is ASMR with Jack.
All right, did we have anything else before we moved on?
Nope.
Well said. Let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Do it. Do it!
Come on! I'm here!
Come on! Do it now!
Come on, guys! They killed Kenny!
Grass tastes bad.
All right, gentlemen. Favorite board games in the Retro Roundtable. Trent had to step away just for a few minutes as the theme song was playing, but he will be right back. So until then, who wants to kick it off?
Go, Randy.
Okay. So as a...
Jeremy, go next.
So my favorite game is called Punch Jack in the Nuts.
I've missed this. You don't get this over Zoom and Skype, do you?
No, you don't. Damn you.
I lost his train of thought.
Totally lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
Okay, so as a young child, I used to play Risk with my dad, which is an adult level game, thinking strategy game, which I don't know why my dad wanted to play that with me. It was more or less just
because you were easy to beat. You were a kid,
pretty much.
As an adult,
made him feel like a big man.
It takes forever to set up because basically what you have to do is it's all the countries and you have to pick your countries.
I mean, this is like, and it's an adult, like as adult as I would say, like Monopoly is. There's strategic thinking that goes into
a lot
it.
More so than Monopoly, right. But I just distinctly remember we'd play, and I get my ass beat every single time, but I literally would Tonto Yoder the shit out of him, because part of that game you get to choose, like, a hidden army, and I would always put it, like, in his, or right next to his, like, home base, just get as close as I fucking...
Him and get him from the inside.
Yeah, yeah, so literally it'd be like you had 10 armies or whatever hidden, and literally I would just, how you like me now, bitch? And then he'd just wipe me out, but...
I have stories so similar to that, but it's not on a board game. It was on Age of Empires 2.
Okay.
I mean, same kind of thing, just much smaller scale, but where I would, you know, be playing in a room with a few other people and, you know, make an alliance with somebody, build a huge army within their walls, and then switch sides and just fuck them up. Made me feel so superior to be a dick.
You can play with my dad sometime. Sorry, that came out gross.
That came out pretty gross.
I've always been afraid to play
I'm not doing anything risky with your father.
I've always been afraid to play it. Maybe because all the pieces were Roman numerals. I don't know. I don't know. It was just so
Roman
weird.
Numerals have always been intimidating.
Jack, what is IV?
There's a globe and a bunch of numbers or I's and V's. I don't understand this game. I have a...
I mean, it's just like territorial conquest, like war and shit, right?
Yeah. You basically roll the dice, and whoever wins, you subtract that many armies. I mean, it's just... Yeah.
I've got a...
No reason to be scared.
Office... What is it called? Office Risk? It's Risk, but like office drama Risk or something like that. Where you're like receiving, management...
oh, you mean supply. Like The Office, like the TV show?
No, it's not... No, it's... It's Risk, but based in the office, where you're in different departments of the business, and you have to...
Really?
Yeah, I have to bring it over, but...
So what is it, like, bang the secretary on the boss's desk, lose 10 guys, or what?
No, you have so many... You're like the manager of your department, and you have to, like, get other employees from other departments back and forth, and you can, like, swap donuts and staplers and Post-its, like, supplies for your stuff.
I like the war version better, I think.
Right. I don't know. But there's like weird office drama cards where you have to go take care of different business and
the Mabel Says card.
Yeah. We haven't played it yet, but I was super interested in it because it sounds fun.
Yeah, it does sound cool. I never knew such a thing existed. I totally thought you were talking about like how they had like off like NBC's The Office Monopoly and The Office Twister and everything else.
Parkour, yeah. Parkour.
Randy, it's me, Dwight.
All right, you gotta get it, man.
Right, Jonathan, how about you, sir?
As a kid, I grew up playing Clue.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Did you ever play 13 Dead End Drive?
No, but I do remember a card. Unfortunately, it's a card game, and that's Lunch Money, but that was just recently. But no, Clue was something that me and my cousins used to play a lot of. And even though I was small, I used to actually whip their ass, so that was good.
Yeah, Clue is a fun freaking game, and if you play it enough, there's, like Jonathan's saying, there's a quick way to win almost every time.
You pay attention to what everyone else is talking about.
Well, that and like the feat, you know, paying very close attention to all the similar and different features between the two. I don't mean, I guess that's pretty obvious. That's the point of the fucking game. I'm not preaching here, but. Yeah, I got to the point, I played it enough where I was just looking for anyone to play Clue with me just so I could beat them. Like choose like who they had in like three turns, you know what I mean? Like, gotcha.
Yeah, jeez. That was that. And of course, there was the very old game Life, like the original version of it.
I love that game.
I don't know if I've ever played Life.
No?
Is that the one where you like get the little pegs in the car, fight for kids and shit?
Yeah.
No, I never have. I've just seen it referenced in pop culture. I've never played it.
Yeah, it's too much real life. It's too much like real life.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, who needs that shit? I go to games for escapism, not to play the small peg in car version of what I'm dealing with on the day to day.
I don't want to get married.
What do you mean?
I need to get away from my troubles. Let's play this game. Oh shit, the game wants me to marry too.
Just run the stop signs where you have to for the life, the certain life things that you have to get. I'm gunning it through this stop sign. No marriage for me. Screw you.
Yeah. Well,
then all of a sudden you have a kid out of nowhere. Shit. Guess that is real life.
Does that version of life like have condoms in it, or is it just know. Like?
Does that normally happen to you when you run stop signs, there, Jack? Like, oh hey.
I don't know. I've never.
It all depends what you're doing in the back seat.
A lot can happen back there.
Unfortunately, yeah.
All right, I'm going to, I'll go next. I'm going to pick something. I don't think I mentioned this the first time around. And if I did, it's been a long damn time. Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? All right, so, and this is kind of a weird pick because I know this is something none of you have played because I made it. All right, so I've loved fucking Price is Right. Did I tell this?
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to tell it again.
That's fine.
Have you heard this?
No.
Okay, I've loved The Price is Right since I was a very, very little kid. And I had, like, Wheel of Fortune board game. Mm-hmm. And okay. There was something, some other TV Jeopardy. Show. Maybe. It was another one of the board with the little plastic sliding panels to look at the questions yeah. and shit. You know what I mean? But I wanted a Price is Right game.
Okay.
And there wasn't one. And so I made one, and okay. the way I made it was, okay, so for like the big wheel you spin, you know, to see if you land on a dollar, we had this old hamster wheel
nice,
at home that I just marked all around the wheel, you know, different
yeah, sure.
price points. And then I'd go through a magazine and cut out like a picture of a car. And then I get out the old Sears magazines, like a picture of a product, you know, all kinds of products, and glue them to cards, and on the back, write in the price of what they, you know, the valued price was.
Right.
And it was a fun little game. I was actually able to make something of it, but like the centerpiece of it for me was, do you know those suckers that you would get when you were a kid that they're like the crystal, like they look like geode suckers. They're on those real
Rock
long
candy?
Sticks. Yeah.
Mm,
yeah.
Okay.
yeah. And at the end of that stick, there's like a little tiny ball.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had one of those. Jack knows where I'm going with this. And I had finished the sucker. Okay. Had just that stick left. And when you take that stick and turn it upside down,
Bob Barker's
it looks
microphone.
Like fucking Bob Barker's microphone. So I painted the end of that shit black.
Oh, nice.
And as we play the game, I would sit there and talk into the shit. So, but it's so funny because I was digging through some stuff. I keep a lot. I'm a nostalgic person, so I keep sure. a lot of stuff. Not that I still have that game, but I found one of the pieces that survived. And it was a little cutout of like a fucking... It was like a 1987 Honda Accord, okay? But when I had cut it out, it was fairly new, somewhat new. And I had wrote on the back what I thought, because I had no concept of money, what I thought something like that was worth. It's like $1,200.
Oh,
but have they ever made a Price is Right board game?
I don't think so.
I don't think I've ever seen one. I'm sure they have like some stupid mobile game for it, but
no, yeah, they do. They absolutely do, and they have you know PC game. Mm-hmm. They may even have stuff for the Switch and stuff now.
Probably.
I don't know, but
it might have been hard just because of the product aspect of it, with prices changing so much, and kids probably have no idea what costs.
I don't know. But, damn, I would have bought that shit in a hot second.
Look, kudos for young Jeremy to go, you know what? Yeah. Fuck it, I'm making my own.
It was one of the most ingenuitive things I'd ever done.
Who did you play with?
My sister and my friends.
Oh, did you?
Like, our cousins lived right next door, so, like, they were always over.
Where's Jeremy at? He thinks he's Bob Barker.
Talking into that fucking stick again.
Just in the hamster wheel.
Yeah. Mom's calling people for help, calling psychologists and stuff.
I don't know what's wrong with him.
So, I actually just looked it up online, and there is a vintage 1986 Milton Bradley The Price is Right board game.
Oh, my God.
Really?
It's available on eBay for $24.99.
Holy shit. I know what I'm getting for Christmas this year from one of you guys. I already know it's coming. And that would have been around the time I was making the fucking thing, too. So
somebody stole your idea, damn it.
No.
Exactly.
I mean, Price is Right had been around for a long fucking time. Yeah. I'm going to have to look that up. Now I'm very curious.
All you need is a hamster cage or a hamster wheel.
You know what, Jer? I bet it does not come with a Bob Barker microphone.
You know it doesn't. That's why mine was superior.
You know it.
All right, enough of that pandering shit. All right. let's move on to Trent. Favorite board game?
Okay, so this one's difficult because I played a lot of crazy board games when I was a kid. Just like everything underneath the sun, all the old school stuff. But the one that I played probably the most, and to be honest with you, be perfectly honest, I still to this day have no idea how you correctly play this game. but I don't even know what it's called.
Me and Mousetrap. My
little brother called it. I was just thinking that.
Me and my little brother called it Shooters, and it was basically like a big wooden board that had four pockets like a pool table, and you had all these little hoops. They were rings. There was like red ones and green ones, and you had white ones. And him and I used to sit there, and we would flick the rings in like the white one and act like we were playing pool, shooting things into the corner pockets. I probably played that thing more than any other thing I've ever played in my entire life. I have no idea that's how you're supposed to play the game. I don't even know what it was originally called, but that's how we played it, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does sound fun, though. I can't imagine what was it called? You guys called it Shooters, but is that what it was really called?
I don't think it was. Honestly, I have no idea. It was like one of those things that like my dad bought it, like, you know, some freaking garage sale in like Amish town, Millersburg, that who knows what it was. And like me and my little brother were just like, okay, well, let's play pool with this. You know what I mean? And that's right. What we would do all day long. Like, I used to love that one. That was probably my favorite one growing up by far, you know?
That reminds me of, I mean, that was much more creative than what I'm about to say, but I think you can still get these some places, the little tabletop pool tables, and right. Like the cues are about the size of a pen, yeah. And they have a little spring in them,
mm-hmm.
And I loved, my grandmother had a pool table, but we never got to see her, and so we had one of those, and I would play it like a crazy amount. And I play pool on my phone, like to this day. Like I don't know what it is, but it's hard to imagine that at that age I was able to hold on to those tiny little billiard balls that came with that set, mm-hmm. because I always had them together. I think it even had a little like racking like cues.
That's
like,
awesome.
With it too.
It did, because I had one. Yeah.
Man,
yeah, unfortunately, I used to use the balls for slingshot pellets. So,
yeah. Oh, there you go.
You didn't grow up in Jack's house, did you?
Because I probably swallowed them.
Never mind.
As a country boy, I used to make, you know, spears and use them for, you know, go out in the woods. So.
Oh, man, I did the same shit. I was a country kid, too, man, all the time. BB guns out in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, my homemade bow and arrow.
I did.
Hey,
one too, out of bamboo.
I had.
John, what's your John? What's your favorite board game? Murdering small animals with a spear.
I used to go down to the creek, and yes, I used to spear crayfish, frogs, fish, snakes, sometimes a stray turtle.
Oh wow!
You know.
Yeah, I my skills never got to that. I was never, never that good. I was just like.
Like I got my foot once.
Throwing the spear at like piles of dirt and stuff. I don't know. I was very much trying to do like the kind of like man versus wild shit when I was a kid in my own woods. I would go back there and just spend the whole day back there like building forts and stuff out of twigs and stuff. And I remember one time I had dug a hole, this big hole, and I lined it with a tarp and like put like sand and mud and stuff in the bottom of it.
Okay.
This is so crazy. This was like up a hill. It's so hard to explain, but it was up a hill, and there was a severe, like a drop off, like where years ago the hill had been dug out, and then a drop off to go down to where I could get water in a bucket.
Okay.
So I had to put up this pulley system that ran from a tree at the bottom of the hill to the top of the hill, because carrying all this water up to the top of the hill was a son of a bitch. So I'd hook it up, go to the top of the hill, and pull this rope, and all this water would come up to me, and I filled that thing and made a little pond.
Okay.
And then I went down to the river and sat in there with a little net and caught like minnows and shit and brought them back to put in the pond. And I came back the next day to check on my progress. I made a raccoon buffet is all I did.
And the mosquitoes were never worse that year.
It was a raccoon buffet, just fish parts and footprints everywhere, man. But... it was fun all the same. All the same. All right, Jack, what you got?
Mine's a young person's, I guess, be called role-playing game, tabletop role-playing game called Hero Quest. It's not funny. No.
We used to own it.
Do you?
Yeah.
I had like it and all the expansions back when I was what 16 when it first came out.
Is that because you were eating all the game pieces of the normal games? Or?
No, I don't eat all the game pieces.
When I was a kid, if there was ever a game that had game pieces that looked delicious, it was Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
But this is... It's a... You have to play at least two players, because one person's basically the dungeon master that controls all the... what's inside the room, because they've got a map of everything. It's basically a light D&D, D&D for kids. Game. Yep.
Okay.
You just can't do everything that you want to do, because the rolls really don't work. It's just maybe attack and defense for the roll when you're fighting and stuff. But at the end of the game, once you finish, like, you have a whole... There's a whole campaign that comes with the game, and as you get through each one, then you get, you know, find so much gold and stuff, and you can actually go to a store, upgrade your gear and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. But I found it at a toy convention a couple years ago for, like, it was a complete set, excellent condition, for like $120, which is, I think, is a pretty good deal. And then Hasbro re-released it
like the next year.
This past year, yeah. They did a huge, their HasLab thing where they upgraded everything. They added like 4 new characters, a bunch of extra monsters and stuff. I want to play with you guys.
Maybe you can find a vintage version of it from 1986 on eBay for like $25.
I've got that one. No, yeah. I guess it would, no, it would have been 90s, not 86. Yeah. This one came with a smartphone, Jeremy.
Okay, Randy, we're going to play this quest. Okay, you're dead.
Forgot.
What's that?
Said you could have went to Toys That Time Forgot, maybe found it up there.
There you go.
Probably. I didn't even... It was just cool because I was walking by the one vendor that was sitting there, and I looked and I was like, oh, damn, look at that game. That game was fun. I used to play that all the time. My wife's like, you want it? I'm like, are you serious? I'm like, how much for this? Is it complete? And the guy's like, yeah, there's everything in here.
That dude was like, I've got this motherfucker by the throat. He wants it, and his wife's offering to buy it. I can say whatever the fuck I want. Just saw two pigeons walking.
Yeah, really.
Cool, cool, cool game. Cool, cool.
Look at these morons coming over here. I got these two.
Oh, no. I'm sure it was a great deal. I mean, I'm sure that game new was probably...
I've searched on eBay, and it's a couple bucks for it. As good a condition as mine is, it is. The only thing is the expansions are stupid expensive. Which they came with more, you know, a whole nother campaign that added to the story, more monsters that come with it, more cards. But yeah,
sweet. Yeah, let's do it.
My only real reference with tabletop like game like that, like role playing, is when we did the Edge of the Empire Star Wars for the show. Quick plug there.
That's Patreon.
That's something we have on Patreon.
You can only
there.
Get it on Patreon.
Yeah, you can only get it on Patreon. But no, I mean, it was fun. It was, it's so funny because the first time I played it, you know, people tell you, I don't know, when I play a game, I'm so used to having restrictions and rules. You know, you can only do so many things. You can never, well, at least I was never able to like fully continue opening my mind to like anything I can think of. I can do right now, you know. It doesn't have to be attack or, you know, flee or, you know.
Well, I tried to do that, and the DM was just like, no, you can't do that. He wouldn't even let me roll to see if I could do it. He just straight up said, no,
he had an agenda.
I know.
He had an agenda.
Is this why you want to play with me, so you could just, like, fuck with me the entire time?
No, because, well, playing Hero
can't
Escape,
do that, Randy.
Or Hero Quest, I am the DM.
Yeah.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, a long time ago, before Randy, before even Jake was here, Jack and I and a few other gentlemen we know got together and did like 15 hours playing Star Wars Edge of the Empire, and we recorded all the sessions, and then we then came home,
scripted it,
recorded it, added sound effects, music, so it sounds like you're listening to a bunch of like horrible actors do a Star Wars story. Yeah. But it was a lot of freaking fun to do. But it's so funny because that DM was so meticulous with everything. And then, like, after every move we were doing, like, everybody'd have to stop and make a joke. And after a while, it just was like, dudes, we got to get through this. Like, we don't have to stop and comment on every fucking thing, you know? But by the end of it, I was just over it. And I saw the DM's, like, heart fall into his asshole toward the end there because he was wanting to, I can't remember what he wanted to do, but he could just see on my face I was done. And so he put the shit down. He goes, this happens, this guy's died, the end. Oh, it was so fun. But damn, was that tedious.
Yeah, it was. You had the most work out of it, having to edit it all.
It was the only editing project that brought actual tears to my eyes. You laugh, but I cry inside.
It did come out really well, though. Give yourself some credit.
Oh my god, I've yet to put anything close to the amount of work I put into that. Like it's oh, anyway, where are we at here?
We squirreled pretty hard on that one.
We're about a good halfway in here, so we can just move on. Unless anyone had any other picks they wanted to get out on the table. No. All right, well, I think that was a fun board game conversation. Boy, that led to a lot of conversation I wasn't expecting. And if any listener of this show will know, I mean, those are the best roundtables.
Yes.
Those are the best ones. So, Trent, Jonathan, thank you for that. Thank you. And we're going to turn our attention over to Jonathan and Trent now. But before we do that, we have to take a quick commercial break. So we will be right back.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business, when you need it, from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And we're back.
Hey.
It's so weird.
I know.
Quickest commercial in history.
Yeah.
Power of
editing. It's great to be on that side of the commercial,
right? All right. Once again, Jonathan, Trent, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. I was looking at your game online, and it looks really cool, but I think Jack and Randy are probably going to know a little bit more about this stuff, because this stuff is so over my head when it comes to role-playing games. I mean, I've designed the character, like I've said before. Mm-hmm. I get that aspect of it, but this looks like it's... And correct me if I'm wrong, your project Gatewalkers, The World of Witorial, which is currently running on Kickstarter, it's an expansion for another game, is that correct?
No, not really. What we did was is because of how Pathfinder 2 works, like Pathfinder 2 has an open game license, which means that you can create content that's playable using their system.
Oh, nice.
You just have to make sure that you adhere to, you know, you don't try to change their rules, which we didn't do. You know, when John and I sat down with our friend Bob and started doing this, you know, originally, we were looking to do this kind of as our own. We were going to build our own game system, and then realized what an unbelievable undertaking that was. and decided, like, okay, let's not build our own D20 system. Instead, let's just kind of figure out what we want to do with it. And Pathfinder 2 came out, and you know, when we played Pathfinder 2, we really realized, like, this was the game system that we had all been waiting on. You know, we're old school gamers. We all started playing second edition. You know, so we like things that are a little more crunchy with a ton of customization. And that's what Pathfinder 2 was. So we started building Watorial and converting all these things that we had done for our own standalone system to work with Pathfinder 2. So that's kind of what the whole Pathfinder 2 compatible thing means. This is really a break. Yeah, it's like a brand new world that you can use the Pathfinder rules to play.
Well, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about this world and exactly what Gatewalkers is then? I mean, story-wise, I know you gave an explanation as to how it fits into the context of Pathfinder, but like the story of what you guys are doing here.
I will turn that over to John, considering the fact that he's the one that's been writing this for 30 years. So
wow,
30 I'll let
years.
Him
do it.
Wow. Okay, well, it was a work in progress. It's actually an amalgamation of 30 years of content that I've either dreamt up, and Trent and Robert are our other partner. I taught these guys how to play. I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons since edition one. So over the years, these guys have played games that I've created. They've added to the stories that I've told, characters that I've helped them create. They gave them life. So I tried to build something that I like to play, that I knew that my friends would enjoy. I didn't write this really for the world, as I've told Trent many times. I wrote it for my friends, which was an original concept for it. This has been the third iteration of what I've wrote as a world. It's changed, evolved, and everything. So together, my two partners and I created this over the years. It's just a fantasy setting with all the bits and pieces that I've found enjoyable from such books as Conan by Robert E. Howard, R.A. Salvatore's work for the Forgotten Realms series. From TSR, even a little bit of Greyhawk, which was one of the original worlds that TSR had built, Dragonlance, steampunk, and even a little bit of sci-fi that I threw in there that I enjoyed. So,
wow, a little bit of everything, huh?
Hopefully, there's a little bit of something in there that somebody might look at and take an interest in. The races that I've thought up and tried to create were things that I found enjoyable. A couple of them I created specifically for these two idiots. because my friend Bob wanted his bug people, so I reintroduced a race called the Mantideo, which are Mantideas of damn praying mantis. So there's those. And Trent, as a joke, had said, I would like to see an intelligent, abominable snowman. Okay. The next day, he got the Mate. Now, yeah. Mate is Tibetan, literally, for abominable snowman. So
that's the worst name ever, John.
Yeah, but yet it became our mascot.
So. It did.
Oh, for Red Sash, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw that. Yes. Okay. That makes sense. All right. Cool.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's how several of these ancestries were born, were that we would be sitting here working on things that John already had built, and something would pop in my head like, we need intelligent Yeti. You know, why not? And then John would show up the next day with an intelligent Yeti layout. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I was joking, you know, or like my the little feral voodoo goblins. I was like, we should take goblins and make them all feral and they use voodoo magic. And he showed up the next day with the Gobarin. Like,
that's awesome.
So, unfortunately, one of the races in there, people are going to look at it and go, oh, hey, yeah, you're a poser, because I had created Amazons. So everybody's going to look and go, hey, Wonder Woman. No, I came up with that about 25 years ago.
So. I did it before it was cool, damn it.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a few things in there that are staples in a lot of fantasy. Like, over the years, they introduced the dragonkin or the half dragons and stuff like that. So there are some things that people look at and recognize from either previous stuff. They're similar, but they're not exactly the same. They are changed in a way to where they are unique to what we've been building. So,
but for somebody that's into that stuff, it's very accessible.
Yeah.
I think you almost need something like that just to make them more comfortable getting into something
right.
that they've never seen before. But, oh, I know this one. Yeah, it's pretty much...
Instead of throwing just 100% foreign, you know, content to them, expecting them to get on board. Yeah, it's like the ease-in factor, I guess.
Yeah, that was one of the big things I wanted us to do. And one of the main reasons I pushed John kicking and screaming to do this is that... you know, like, one of the big things that I have a problem with, and I don't know how many of you are, like, hardcore tabletop role players, but, like, one of the big issues I have with any of the modern systems is when you step into them, you got, like, six options for an ancestry, and you've got, like, maybe six or seven options for class, and that's it. I get tired of playing dwarves all the time. I get tired of playing humans all the time. And, like, John had so many of these unique races and, you know, our ancestries created that I was like, that really attracted me to it, because I, you know, I don't necessarily always want to just be a human or just be a dwarf or just be an elf. Like, give me something unique, you know, give me a half giant, let me play a big giant centaur, or, you know, or one of our brutes, or an intelligent Yeti, you know what I mean? Like, and you know, so I think that's one of the great things about what we put together here is that the options are hugely, like, they're expansive for what you can actually play and do in the world.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
That's cool, because usually, you know, you only get like, what, six or eight different things to pick from, but then you're out in the world, running into all these other kind of things. You'd be like, why couldn't it be that?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think starting off, we have, what, 18 races?
Yeah, there's 18 playable ancestries in this first book.
And a couple of the things that I went back to doing was in the late 80s, early 90s, the elves and the dwarves actually had breakdowns in their bloodlines. You had the dark elf, you had the sylvan, you know, the high, gray, and a crap ton of other ones. I kind of tried to bring that back, and I renamed some of these races after historical races, like the Dwevlar is Nordic for dwarf,
okay,
and Elfar is the Nordic term for the elves. Just like the Mantidea is the Latin term for, obviously, the praying mantis. And so I tried to bring a little bit of stuff in there, like Gobrin is Japanese for goblin. So
so this is, I've just got to ask, like, I know now, as far as creation goes, I know you said, you know, this has been an accumulation of ideas from the past, 30 years or so. But, you know, from the time that you guys decided that you wanted to take these ideas, put them together in this way and make a game of it, like, how long does that take? I mean, this seems so detailed and convoluted. Like, I can't imagine the meticulous detail that must go into something like this.
Okay, the headache of this is on Trent, because everything that I have created and or helped create has all been handwritten. They were all notes that I had, and just books, tablets, and stuff that I've written down and kept there, and then trying to translate my shorthand, so to speak, into this was an undertaking. We've been doing it pretty much for a year and a half nonstop from the time we decided to go into it hardcore. So,
yeah. I mean, we've been working on the world on this entire thing for almost 3 years. We did take a break in there for a little while when we decided not to go with our own D20 system. But the last like year and a half, it's been just about every evening and every weekend. I get done with my day job and I turn around and I'm typing. And for those of you guys that know John, you know, he's his handwriting is akin to like some mix between a drunken baby and a neurosurgeon. So like
my kind of writing.
Being able to decipher what was written in these books was complicated, to say the least.
It's like deciphering runes and glyphs.
Exactly.
Easy. Sanskrit's easy.
I'm talking to somebody that got confused with Roman numerals here.
Yeah, I absolutely am fluent in Jonglish in Jonglish now. You know what I mean? Like it's its own language, it's its own way of writing. I'm completely fluent in it. I can translate it pretty much out of whim now at this point. So.
But it's so cool that you guys are taking such a passion project and bringing it to everybody else. I mean, just it sounds like the depth of the storytelling ability from this is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean that's. I give all that to John. You know, John, I've been gaming with John for, you know, most of my life, and he's one of the best storytellers I've ever known. And, like, the rich history that lives in this world is crazy. Like, I mean, the first probably 50 pages of this book are just nothing but timelines and histories and the story of this war-torn, like just slavery-ridden, like, world that has just been... just destroyed time and time again by war and chaos and people like lusting for power. And he just lays all that out in such a great way. Like one of the things I really like about this book is whether or not like you're a DM that wants to jump in and just write a from the ground up campaign and do your own thing with it, this book lends to that very easily. We fill in enough details about all the areas and the different ancestries and whatnot that, you know, you know how to build something with it, but we didn't lay something so stringent that like you can't create your own thing. But on top of it, like the way this timeline is laid out, like you can just decide to jump into, and John, I don't know what era it is, so you have to correct me, but you jump into one of the eras and play something that happened during the Infernicus Wars or during the Tidal Wars or during like the Great Dragon Wars and all that kind of stuff. Like you can jump into different points of history and play your game in those parts, which I just think is amazing.
That's cool.
That was going to be my question. Is it just a book of like lore and stats, or is there actually that campaign stuff in there? But that's pretty much answering my question.
Like Trinit said, I tried to make a sandbox world. Like the regions, there's 44 different regions on the continents that are in the book itself. So there's enough information there, like who rules it and everything else. But we left it up to those people that jump into it to actually flesh it out. Like we'll take Stoneworth in the continent of Ebon. It's ruled by a guy by the name of Antares Duerth, which was an old character that I had played. I give a level, his like alignment, his race, and what class he is, but I give no stats, which means the DM, if he wants to flesh it out a certain way, the stats will, you know, he has to do that, or the players themselves can create, you know, that type. The world itself is actually pretty massive once we actually calculated the mileage. So the main continent of Ebon is two of the United States put together.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So it's a massive, there are cities and stuff, but it's also, it's even mentioned within the beginnings of the book that it's still very primal. So there are pockets of civilization, but it's not like a modern metropolis or some of the fantasy settings where it's forested, but not very primal, and that, you know, there it's almost modernized. So there's a lot of leeway for anybody to take it and put a city, you know, somewhere or a town. It's all up to them. There's important places, and that's about it. So it's very much a sandbox world where you can do whatever you want, and you can add to it whatever you want or take away from it. So, you know, if you don't like this city, blow it up. It's all good. You can just create another one.
It's so cool too, because being able to play like a role-playing game like that versus a traditional board game is you get a completely different experience every time you play it. For somebody like me who didn't really get into it at first and then has played more so now, just being able to, you know, do whatever you want is and still get the same enjoyment out of it that you would, you know. You can only play Monopoly so many times.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I love that line, too, that he said, if you don't like the city, blow it up and build a new one. It sounds like Bane, doesn't it?
You
can be if you want to be Bane-ish, right?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. There's a race called the Brutes, which you could play. That's pretty much your Bane.
I will blow up your city.
You have that religion that follows it, so you're just straight up an evil person. I don't want to play with him.
Well, Trent made an offhand remark one day, and since we're in the process of doing a couple other books, we'll leap ahead a few books just in case. But he said sometime, why don't we just blow up Stoneworth then? Well, and it happened. So I blew it up. And may even put it into histories and everything for him. Yes, you're welcome.
Damn talking
games.
I even killed my own character. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, that wasn't my decision. I made that comment passing. And just straight passing. Like, you know, maybe in the next edition we should blow up Stoneworth. And then John shows up the next day with an entire multiple pages written about how Stoneworth is destroyed. So, you know, that's usually how things go. But yeah, we are crazy enough to be doing a couple more books too. So I think we're nuts, but we're gonna go ahead and go for it. But it's gonna be fun, man. I think we're gonna have five total by the time we're done that we're looking to actually release. So
yeah. Wow.
Well, you guys are passionate about it, and it's something you love, and that, no matter what you're doing, translates into the project. So, I mean, it's you're not, you know, just trying to make a game for the sake of making a game. You guys know what you want out of a game, and you're making it happen. And you know, if you want it, a million other people want it too, you know? So, just looking at your Kickstarter, you know, it's only been up, looks like it's in its first few days still, and it's doing pretty darn well from what I've seen.
Yeah.
So, congrats to you guys.
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, it's doing all right. You know, hopefully we get there. We're really hoping we get there at the end of the day. You know, it's you know, it's a matter of getting it in front of people, man. Getting people to come check it out. I mean, we're doing something that's different, and you know, I do feel that in the current state of what's going on with, you know, the tabletop role playing game community, as it exploded over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. You know, with just the release of Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, which, whether you like it or not, you know, they did introduce a lot of new people to gaming by simplifying the system. Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing that I you know, we are, I don't want to say this, we're very niche because of the fact that, you know, we do add some more complexity back into the game that we enjoyed, which allows you to get a lot more customizable with your character creation. You know, things like giving, you know, certain ancestries get certain innate abilities, like the Dark Alphar can, you know, they get a few like innate spells that they can cast. You know, give me another one, John. The Matei have like this ability to kind of blind everybody by, you know, because they have bright white fur, so they can kind of reflect sunlight and blind everybody. So, you know, we wanted to kind of create something that, you know, whenever I was initially started playing this game with John, like, our characters were ridiculously powerful. Like, I mean, we were Super Saiyans, you know, in the worlds we're playing in. And I wanted to bring that back. I wanted to give everybody that opportunity. So, you know, I've had some people, you know, take a look at what we've done, and they're like, these things seem really strong. But that's kind of what we wanted to do, though. You know, like, I always try to make the comparison to, you know, Pathfinder 2 uses the world Galarian. If a character from Watorial were to show up on Galarian, it would be like Thor showing up on Earth. You know what I mean? Like, Thor, Watorial's a lot like Asgard. Everybody is much stronger than they would be on Earth, you know?
Again, come to Earth and take over.
Yeah, kind of. You know, that's the thing. You know, a few Dwevlar and a couple of the new classes we're creating for the next book that's coming, hopefully later this year or beginning of next year, you know, would probably be able to take over Galarian with just like maybe 8 of them.
I don't know about all that, but
I don't know, dude. You mix a couple of those rune casters and a couple of high old ones and a few Battleborn, and I think they'd run over Galarian.
You'll have it sitting in front of you tomorrow.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
That was a mistake on my part, you know.
Well, let me work on that Dwarven Strike Force here for you here.
So our listeners can go over to redsashpublishing.com to check out, you know, more about you guys, and then get led over to the Kickstarter. And we're going to be also putting links to the Kickstarter on our website and social media and stuff as we promote the episode. And I also found on Twitter that you guys are at redsashpublish. Is there anywhere else people should be checking you out?
Yeah, you can also find us on Facebook, and there it's just at Red Sash Publishing as well. We do Facebook and Twitter, and then we have the website. We do most of our updates through the website. There's a pretty extensive blog there where John and I are constantly releasing just information about the world, deeper histories, you know, a few like kind of teasers of the different monsters and ancestries and stuff that we have in Watorio.
Yeah, there was something I saw on there. I don't even know what it was, but it looked like a almost like a Black Widow spider, but the abdomen was like a head. Oh my God! It was like fucking nightmare fuel.
Yeah, that's
nightmare creatures. That I told John we were playing a Pathfinder campaign, and I wanted to create. I created this story around like this alien tech that was on the planet that kind of started, once it got released, it started terraforming. So I wanted to create these zombies that were basically covered in spores like mushrooms and stuff. And the whole thing that they were doing is they released this fungus that actually terraforms the planet for this alien invasion to happen. So I told John I wanted the spore dead, and he came back with spore dead, and I was like, these are really cool. And then we were sitting around talking one night, we made the joke about that everybody makes who plays Dungeons and Dragons, which is, you know, an owl bear. That's great, but what about a bear owl? How terrifying would it be to see a full flying bear? John showed up the next day with like 30 freaking nightmare creatures that were just like the craziest thing in the world. And that is the Childer. It is one of my favorites. It is absolutely terrifying.
It is. Like, if I saw one of those coming my way, I'd be dead before it even got to me, like heart attack, stroke, I don't know.
Goodbye, I'm done.
Yeah,
just lay there.
I just pass out.
Yeah, it's basically it's body mimics the head of a child, and it will build nests, and it will hide, and it can actually mimic the sound of a crying child to draw prey near to it.
And whenever you get there,
they descend out of the tree.
It's too close to bedtime, dude. Like,
my 3-year-old's gonna come running at me.
What are you trying to fucking do to me? The picture is bad enough. Now the story with it? Holy cow. That's horrifying. Oh. Yeah. I got to go back on there now and look at the rest of these things. And I like to encourage our listeners to also, once again, head over to redsashpublishing.com to check out some of these creatures, because holy shit. Yeah. Holy shit. So, and the best of luck to you guys on your Kickstarter. Looks like, again, you're off to a great start, and based on what we're seeing and hearing from you guys, you won't need too much luck. Sounds like it's going to happen.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. This has been a blast of an episode. Yeah. I've needed this. This has been really fun. So, Jack, what do we have on the website, sir?
Go to CannedAirPodcast.com, where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, and click on that evergreen website at the bottom of the page to go check out some more evergreen podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. Not only our show, but all the other amazing shows the Evergreen Podcast Network has to offer, right? Mm-hmm. And another quick shout out we need to do here really quick.
Yes, we do.
Is the computer that Candair has been created on.
Oh, yes.
When did I get that? It was like 2012, like right before we started the show.
Just before we started, yep.
And that
was for tax time.
Yes, I did. Yep. Yeah, I did. But it was like just over. Yeah, it was like just over $1,000. Macs are freaking expensive. Yeah.
Hashtag PC.
So, yeah, whatever. And so this computer held out for how long now? We've been doing this. Was it going on our 8th year?
Yep.
Almost 400 episodes.
Well over 400 episodes. Yeah. I mean, counting all these, all the stuff that didn't get released, special projects, Patreon.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It put some work in. And it finally passed away. And, you know, I had sweat running on down my brow because, like, I can't afford another fucking grand computer, you know, and I'm not going to, I'd rather cancel the show than do it on a PC. So, so Randy reached out to Will, what's his last name again?
Will Melton at Retro Hacks.
Yes, and saw what he had around. And he had a computer over there that was just a few years newer than my previous one, but it's still older, but still in much better condition than my other one. So between the three of us, we were able to put money together to get everything needed here, and my longtime friend Ryan Donahoe, who was a Mac expert, tore it down to its bolts and reassembled it, and we are up and ticking again. So
it looks amazing.
It looks amazing. I just wanted to thank everybody, not only in this room, but those people who helped to make this happen, because we were talking about this before the show started. I think, like I said, the other one was over $1,000. I think total we put like $350 into this thing, and it's working way better. It's working way better. So, again, big thanks to everybody. I didn't mean to get long-winded on that, but I felt they needed thanks. So.
Yes, yes.
So thanks to those people, and I think that's going to do it for this episode. So until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
I'm Logan.
I'm Trent Rayburn.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and be excellent to each other.
Puppy. Oh no!
Don't run, it'll only make things worse.
Mutt!
Remember, you never want to approach a stray dog, especially one that's foaming at the mouth. Get away from the animal as quickly as you can and tell a grown-up.
Hey!
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
We got two people?
Yes.
I don't remember seeing that in the calendar.
I mean, if we're getting technical, it wasn't in the calendar, okay, Randy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
It was news to me.
I mean, there's a whole other fucking game show on the calendar that had to go away, but, you know, it's all right. You know, bust Randy's balls about one guy.
No, the more the merrier.
This has been a Canned Air production.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.